This is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here with J.R. Rivers of Cumulus Networks.
Good morning, Ian. For those of you who don't know Cumulus Networks, we're obviously a networking company, hence the network in the name, and we are founded on the observation that workloads in general are going to start moving into infrastructure built on web-scale IT practices. You know, when we started the company, we didn't know what web-scale IT was from a terminology perspective. Gartner kind of coined it along the way, but it was founded on my observation with a lot of reasonably large customers and with Google when I was working there, that the days of traditional IT where a business unit might come and say, hey, we want to run an application, buy these servers and this storage and this network and put it all together, and then IT would take it over and run it from cradle to grave, and nobody really knew why any of these decisions were made. You move to a different model where the infrastructure teams build infrastructure and host applications, and then the infrastructure team goes off and builds the next generation infrastructure. So this is kind of constantly evolving and updating infrastructure that continually provides a better platform to run the company's business on.
One of the other things we've seen that plays to that is we're now seeing applications moving to the edge. The new generations of switches are as much a platform as they are just a switch or a router. So applications are moving to the edge to deal with data when it comes in, to deal with security when it comes in. And that seems to play very much to your proposition.
It does. It's this observation or this constant march of Linux and Linux networking that starts to allow people to make really good architectural decisions about where they put a particular function, and they're not bound by some very large expensive piece of hardware or a certain vendor or anything else like that. They can put it where they want to have compute.
When I look at the networking space, we've been limited to just a few operating systems running on the switches, big vendors who've dominated the space. The last 5-10 years, we've seen a number of open source projects come in. You've, of course, brought Linux to this space. How fast do you see the space changing as people start to look to break away from those monolithic vendors?
You know, that's a phenomenal question, and I think it's actually a pretty layered response. You have, as you pointed out, traditional vendors that would bring software and hardware integrated as kind of a black box appliance, and clearly each of those traditional suppliers has the ability to draw a line and separate their hardware and software, and we're seeing a little bit of that around announcements these days where they separate their hardware and software. The operating software itself, the network model, how you integrate it into your workflows, how do you build your own operations, those are still tied around a proprietary model, whatever that large vendor thought it would be. We've seen some open source projects that also have that same flavor. There's one called OpenSwitch that's running right now. I'll say that the people working on it are grossly well-intentioned, but they're building a monolith. It's our perspective on how networking should work. And if you look at a modern data center with that premise that everything's moving to web-scale IT, if you do just a little bit of observation, what you recognize is a tremendous amount of networking gets done on hosts, on servers, with the Linux network model. Things that deviate from that actually get in the way as opposed to adding benefit. And that's one of the observations we made coming to Cumulus. I've been in this industry forever, built a bunch of switch operating systems from the ground up, and I realized along the way that it's time for a different approach to the problem. 7 years ago when we started the company, we said Linux networking model all the way, and it's amazing what's happened in the Linux networking model over that time period. Part of it because we've participated, but a lot of it because people just need it. As the host gets more and more rich, you need to add more functionality in that Linux networking model, and then obviously the switches and routers get to take advantage of it as well.
There's another side to that. If we look at where OpenStack and some of the other projects have gone, they've also pulled in networking components. The OpenStack Foundation has started to take a closer look at the various projects involved. It's starting to go back to the whole idea of modular so you can put blocks in and out. We've heard a lot about NFV now. How much does that enhance what you're looking to do, or does that become a competitor to what you're trying to do?
I would say our aspirations are reasonably modest. Whenever someone's building a web-scale IT environment, you have a bunch of compute nodes and you need to connect them with physical networking stuff. And our aspiration is to help people provide great physical networking stuff that works consistently with the networking that lives on the servers. Super complementary, almost orthogonal. With that said, when someone's deploying OpenStack, they're typically doing it as infrastructure as a service, either as a public service they offer or for their internal customers. And they need everything to be consistent from a functional perspective. So we spend a lot of time with our OpenStack customers and ourselves figuring out how to make it all fit together in a way that's super powerful for the customer, and not just like the coolest thing that I can talk about on stage, but it's more about, okay, how do I lifecycle manage this thing for 3 or 4 years? How do I upgrade switches? How do I upgrade servers? And all these little processes that people have to think about when they really want to operationalize this. And so that's where we spend our time.
The network's become much more complicated. It used to simply be a little bit of wire down which we stuffed things and hoped it worked. These days, network is no longer just about basic IP. We're adding more and more functions, more and more technology. it's no longer just about networking from a data perspective. The telephony companies are coming in. Enterprises now view their network as being this huge converged monolith that's moving data, video, audio, and telephony at the same time. Do you see a lot more work going on in the open source world to bring these projects together? Or are we still working with a lot of separate projects and we need another evolution to finally get proper convergence?
That's a good question. I would say it's not clear to me that you want convergence. And I'm going to take a big shot at this, but it's an observation that I've made along the way. The Linux kernel, from any functional perspective, storage, scheduling, memory management, virtualization, networking, everything, it moves really, really fast, faster than almost anything I've ever seen from a technology perspective, especially for a distributed, non-single company development group. I mean, it's kind of phenomenal to watch it occur. And the reason that works so well is because people can take a bit and work on it with three or four of their favorite other people and then contribute it back, and it fits in. It becomes consistent and works, and then other people start working around it because it's part of the system. So that leads to tremendous speed and agility in terms of adding features and functions. What it doesn't do really well, in fairness, is the user interfaces are always a little slightly sketchy. And so when I look at NFV and all these pieces, I know there's a push, especially a lot of times from large vendors, to try and pull everything together under grand unifying principles. It's not clear that's actually in the best interest of those involved. We work with some very large customers that are deploying OpenStack clouds, and they stay away from a lot of that, actually. We're going to separate this bit and that bit, keep them slightly separate so that they have their own life cycle and development perspective and expertise.
One of the issues about simplicity and making it easier to install is about removing some of the inherent complexity in the way we've built IT systems. We've tended to spend a lot of time writing complex code, writing integrations, and customizing what we do. One of the things we're starting to hear a lot about now is using containers. A lot of people want to actually make this so we just configure, we don't customize. And that plays quite well to the idea of a dynamic at-scale environment.
It's interesting to watch that container evolution go, because I was talking to more than one customer this week where they almost maybe looking at going full circle, where they've gone to a virtual machine environment, they've gone and looked at containers, and now some of them are even looking at these lightweight hypervisors where it's just a kernel and little bits of the kernel and application, super, super thin virtual machine that they then stand up with almost the same deployment capability as a container. But it has a lot of the security principles that you would get out of a virtual machine, because there's actually hardware protection of data and constructs. It's interesting to watch all those pieces together, but the theme that runs through that, as you pointed out, is taking something that you're going to deploy, putting it together. You said define it by configuration. You can then test that to make sure you're comfortable with it, and then it's a very predictable, transparent element, as opposed to something that's getting cobbled together as it's running.
If we look at the issue of overhead within a network, a lot of the effort is spent trying to tune the network, get rid of unwanted stuff. By being able to just choose the components you want and have them separated so they're not part of a big monolithic stack, that has the potential for reducing a lot of overhead on network, which is the bottleneck for so many companies. In the work you've been doing with customers, have you seen much in the way of reduction as they've started to look more at the stack and what they need?
We have, and it's at least the way we've seen it roll out, it's not as obvious as you would think. We're seeing them build bigger and better networks, faster networks, and they'll oftentimes do it so that they can simplify the deployment of functions by separating bits and pieces out. And NFV is a great example of it. 10 years ago, if I said, you know what we're going to do is we're going to have a server, and it's going to send a packet. It's going to go up to the core of your network. It's going to get reflected all the way back out to the edge to go through a load balancing function or an intrusion detection function, and then circle back up to the core of the network and then go to another machine, you would say I was insane. The reason that was true is because the networks were super constrained. There was all these little choke points and oversubscription areas, and the latency was bad, and the throughput overall on the servers everywhere was really bad. We're seeing that same service chaining occurring with NFV, but because the networks are so fast and low latency that there's actually not much perceptible overhead for the application layer, but it makes the operations layer scale phenomenally better than it used to because you've kind of torn those bits apart.
Management's always been an interesting challenge. As we've built out our network, it's become complicated to manage. The big vendors have brought their own management tools that work with their operating systems. They've started to be more open, started to absorb other people's stuff, but it's still a separate set of management to that which we use on the network. Being a Linux-based solution, of course, the advantage here is I don't need to go and spend large sums of money sending my staff off to learn Cisco's solutions, for example. I can just pick up a whole bunch of Linux administrators, I won't say relatively cheaply, but with reasonable ease. Are you seeing your customers now treating the network as simply the rest of their IT estate instead of keeping it as a whole separate group on its own?
It's interesting because of all the things you've brought up before is that with the advent of, we'll call it grossly software-defined networking, what's built into OpenStack with ML2, you can do layer 2 VLANs if you want to be small scale, or you can use overlays. There's a lot of different solutions you can use for policy management and access control, or you can use NFV for a strict service chaining. It allows the network architects to think in three different planes. One of them is going to be your outside the world. How do I get to the WAN? Where are my ISPs? How do I fit? Where do my POPs live? How do I buy bandwidth and capacity and string things up? There's another layer, which is, I'll call it a logical layer. What functions do I need between point A and point B? Oh, I need a load balancer. What's the right load balancer to use? And because it's working in a logical layer, you can string up that logical topology, typically using overlays is what we're seeing more and more. Or in container environments, it's just static IP addresses or IP addresses that people use. And then you have the cluster team, the people that actually build the infrastructure, you know, where the bits actually turn into photons, move around, and all that good stuff. That last layer, you start people recognizing is, having it be self-consistent from an operations perspective, configuration management, monitoring, troubleshooting, all of those pieces is super powerful. We call them cluster admins, people that are, doesn't matter whether you're come from a networking background or a sysadmin background, but you're generalized enough that you can understand, you know, storage, virtualization, networking, CPU configuration, TCP, all those little pieces, and you can help build the best cluster infrastructure that the team needs. When customers flip that switch and they realize that there really are three tiers, and then they apply the right mindset to each of the tiers, we watch them be super, super productive. We watch many customers struggle, though, because they come at this new world with the old silos. And so the networking silos feels responsible not just for the WAN and not just for the logical flow, but also for the cluster networking piece. The ones that are clicks in their head, they let go of that. They may help, you know, provide some help. You know, here's some architectural help, or you want to run this protocol and that protocol or whatever. But then they get out of the way and leave it to an infrastructure team to run. It's beautiful.
How much are you seeing a change in terms of the speed and cost of deployment? If we look at deploying traditional network components, we've got to go and buy a switch or a router. We've got to bring it in. We've got to configure it. We've got to sort out where it's going to sit in the network. We've got to provision power. We look around the average data center estate or even inside the average IT department, we've got a lot of machines that have got spare capacity on them. By being able to just deploy as a Linux solution, is that reducing cost? Do you have any numbers or figures on cost and speed of deployment?
We have anecdotal evidence. One of our large banking partners, they went through this transformation, and they have two phases. They clearly have their traditional IT business that pays the rent, that runs all the current applications, and they have a cloud IT group, and they came up with their cloud footprint, and now when they deploy new capacity, whether it's for a Hadoop cluster or an OpenStack cluster, or containers or whatever, it's always that same infrastructure blueprint. And, you know, to your point about the hardware bits of it, because it's reasonably cookie cutter, they're able to go bid that out with a bunch of different hardware suppliers like a Supermicro or a Dell or an HP or a Quanta, and that supplier will come in with all the racks cabled. They show up. So it saves our partner a ton of time on the procurement side because they're only talking to one person. They don't have to do the racking and stacking and powering and all that kind of stuff. And then when all of that hardware capacity shows up, it takes them like 15 minutes and they've imaged the system and they're up and running. And so you can go from, yep, the hardware's in there to here's my Hadoop cluster in 15 minutes.
Are you seeing customers looking at new types of applications? For example, when I talk to companies like Mellanox, they've been doing an awful lot with accelerators inside their switches, and that's bringing applications physically into the switch. Good example of that is you've got a large amount of data coming in from a whole bunch of IoT devices. You don't necessarily want all that data, but your problem historically has been you've got to capture it, you've got to move it all the way across the network to the servers, you've got to store it, and then you process it. What they're seeing is customers looking at those applications physically on the switch and making decisions. It's throwing away unwanted data, it's refining the data, so what moves across the inside network is a much smaller, much more refined set of data. They get to results quicker. It also means that some things can be done in much more close to real time than they could otherwise do. Now, they have the advantage of having set this out and been building this for a while. Being Linux-based, how much is that helping you by having a much wider pool of developers who can then just write and deploy?
In fairness, we are not seeing that same sort of desire to integrate that functionality into a switch, as maybe, I'm not sure who Mellanox is working with on that front. We are seeing people starting to be very cognizant of what data they store. The word telemetry has been a buzzword for a while, and the definition of telemetry for many is gather up a bunch of stuff, anything you can think of, and throw it somewhere, and maybe you'll figure it out later. Over time, what happens is obviously you have to store that stuff, and then you have to actually go back and make sense of it. And it's the code that goes back to make sense of it that nobody ever gets around to, and then you have too much data, your ability to access and query against data gets diminished quite a bit. What we see people doing is, you know, pushing agents out as far into the system as possible. On our switches, for instance, they'll collect buffer depths and data rates and all these other things where you might have just sent a counter over to a database every half a second or 100 milliseconds or whatever. You'll put a very intelligent agent out there that actually watches things and sends over peaks and averages and all these other things. So the data that gets sent is less frequent, but more concentrated or more meaty, as it were. Then you can query against that, more meaty data, to gain insights on how your system is behaving.
Are you seeing an increase in the amount of encryption that people want to deploy?
Interestingly enough, I was at Cisco for a long time. I was there for 16 years, but there was this big, long argument about encryption, especially in the kind of data transport space. The argument was that the network should participate in that encryption. And it always kind of seemed like a flawed argument, because when you look at encryption, any sort of security thing, it's all about trust. I trust you, and I'm going to authenticate against you. And if it's just you and I, science understands how to make that work. If there's a man in the middle, science knows how to make that not work. Right? Exactly right. In the end, kind of back to people employing applications on a switch to digest data, most of the time when an IoT device is transmitting data across the network, they actually encrypt it. And so intermediate devices don't really get to see it very well.
One of the things we are seeing is the need to be able to undo encryption, because the bad guys have very quickly learned that actually if they can encrypt the data and move it out of the network, nobody can see the data, so nobody knows what's being stolen. We're also seeing a shift in the UK in particular, where we're seeing the network operators being told that by law there's a risk that they're going to have to be told to decrypt all data, which means they have to become that man in the middle looking at encrypted data streams and decrypting those streams. We have some devices, the SSL gateways, that allow us to do some of this stuff. Do you think this is a dangerous place for us to be going, forcing people to be decrypting streams all the time?
Yeah, that's a interesting argument. It's typically argued that you need to do that in light of national security or world security, whatever. But I would challenge whichever governing body is forcing people to decrypt that they should just do the same thing themselves. So if the government wants everybody to decrypt in the middle, then they can decrypt as well, which is obviously they won't. They will provide really strong security, end-to-end security measures. It is rather interesting. When I was growing up, we used to look at George Orwell and worry about Big Brother and all of that. And we did it assuming that the government was going to be the culprit here. And what you stop and realize these days is the consumer is the culprit. We put so much of our lives on the internet for free. It's amazing how much access to information anybody has on us.
One of the things on the cybersecurity side that I've been looking at over the last couple of years with some other people is the amount of data that is being brought together and then mined by cyber criminals. It's not the fact that that breaches 100 million records, it's the fact that that 100 million is combined with another 100 million, with 50 million from over here and 25 million from there, and they just build these patterns from this data. Ironically, they're doing a far better job of some big data analysis than large enterprises are.
It's because there's money to be made there, right?
Always helps focus the mind. JR, thank you for your time today.
It's my pleasure, Ian. Take care.